Love or laws when law punishes life. By Pierre F. Walter and published by Sirius C Media Galaxy LLC, Newark, Delaware, 2007. ISBN 10-1933-137-002. ISBN 13-978-1933-137-001. Dedication. This study is dedicated to the late Senator Dr. Edward Brongersma, 1911-1998, Amsterdam, Haarlem, Holland, in deep gratitude for providing pertinent information on the reform of the laws of consent in the Netherlands. Introduction. What are sex laws good for? Are they regulating sexual behavior? Are they helping the state supervise what we do in bed and with whom? Are they protecting minors? Are they safeguarding morality? What is the reason they have been established in the first place, and when? And by whom? Are they built upon rational and verifiable principles, or upon irrational assumptions, or a dubious notion like public morals, which ghosts around in legal textbooks? I guess most of us have once in a while asked some or all of these questions regarding the strangest body of law there is in the world, sex laws. In my career as a lawyer, I have dealt with these laws quite a bit, as they were my particular research topic, while I was not the only jurist to be disgusted at them. I remember that in our criminal law class at Saarland University in Germany, Professor Dr. Kraus was even more than me. He said that none of the so-called sex laws had merited the term law, as they were for the most part arbitrary injunctions built upon extra-legal considerations, such as moral opinions, instead of being drafted as rational and verifiable Tatbestände. In addition, he showed us, with many examples, that some of these laws were flagrant violations of constitutional guarantees, especially the guarantee of nulla poena sine lege, and thus of the very foundations of democracy. And by the way, nulla poena sine lege is called in the Anglo-American legal system due process, which is also a constitutional guarantee. After 1 year of postgraduate research that I conducted on this topic at the University of Georgia in the United States, I was so revolted that I put myself at work to draft a legal bill that intently liberates all forms of sexual behavior from state supervision and control and leaves the stress instead upon both physical and sexual violence. Thus, the bill leaves no doubt that the law does not punish love or life, but only violence, which is something no responsible society can tolerate. In my attempt to publish that first paper about physical and sexual violence against children, I was rejected by three publishers, one from Germany, one from the Netherlands, and one from the United States. My paper was found either too feminist or too revolting, depending on the orientation of the publisher. But I got encouraging opinions too, for example from Françoise Dolto, the late French child therapist of worldwide renown that I interviewed in Paris after my return to Europe. Dolto agreed with me that sex laws as they are at present, and especially the laws for the protection of minors with their legal consent ages, are really punishing life, and that their effect upon minors is all but protective, but virtually enslaves children and robs them of their body. On the other hand, it has to be seen that many psychoanalysts, and especially those like Dolto, who follow the Freudian approach, are double-tongued in that on one hand they concede the child the right for self-gratification in form of masturbation, but on the other hand deny the child to maintain erotic relationships outside of the family. From the moment Freud rejected Reich's engagement for the free sexual copulation among children with the argument that culture primes, psychoanalysis has largely backed up Western society's persistent denial of children's free love life and erotic friendships outside of the family.